I have a motion that the board, I move that the board certify to the best of its members' knowledge, and with no individual missenting, that at the just concluded executive session, only such matters as were authorized for discussion in executive session under board procedure 6, and only those matters identified in the motion by which the executive session was convened were heard, discussed, or considered by the board.
Second.
Hearing a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much. We'll go to the planning and development item, and come back to, I think our board will contain, so is there, are there any changes to the agenda? Hearing none, no objections. Then the next item is the minutes for the June 12th meeting. Is there a motion or questions? Mr. Benjamin.
As usual, I have some suggestions for changes on page 3 of 65.
Okay. 3 of 63 of 52.
Oh, sorry, okay.
It's a
no,
different.
Against the old version.
Page 3.
Yeah, page 3 of 52 minutes. On the second paragraph, I believe that when we did the approval was only to accept the bus network evaluation fund findings. We did not approve any implementation, and specifically that was one of the points that was made, and we did not authorize any initiation of purchase of vehicles, which also seems to be in yet. So this is different from what I believe we voted on both in committee and at the board. So I would ask that the period be put after word findings, and that's where it stops.
Thank you. You have any no questions?
And I agree. One other change on D, second line, just to clarify what's going on there, it says to provide off-site, and I think I would put in there also rather than on-site, because that was the issue. Not off-site versus non, it was off-site versus on-site parking.
Okay.
And I guess I just have a question. I don't remember exactly how we did the on-call engineering services. This says that we forwarded it without recommendation. Was there a reason for that?
There was a resolution in the package that was related to another project that caused confusion, and
that was forwarded to the board. I remember that. Okay, so that was it.
Any questions about recommendation?
Yes, I'm confused a little bit on the on-site issue, because right after that sentence it explains how it's difficult to provide them on-site. Is that not sufficient? Or?
Well, the developer, what I was looking at was the way the sentence is written, and it just says the developer has an option doing off-site or on-site. And this discussion was, well, they had a potential off-site, but we didn't like the off-site. Therefore, were we going to drop it completely? So the original position had to be laid out. Is it off, you know, that they could do either. That's
okay.
All.
Okay. All those in favor of the minutes as amended?
Aye.
And I guess there was a motion and a second. And that was accepted. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none. The second set of minutes for the June 26th, which was our abbreviated meeting. Is there a motion for approval?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes approved for June 26th. Okay. All right. All right, the next item on the agenda are the actions from executive session. First action is the approval of the term sheet by the Navy Yard Tiller site. Is there a motion? And the motion is, as indicated, to select the developer of the Navy Yard Tiller.
Second.
And are there any questions? Hearing there were two items there.
Yeah, I'd like to make an amendment to my motion to
to add that environmental certification standards of the subject jurisdictions be included to the development proposal and the affordable housing requirements, again, of the District of Columbia be taken into consideration.
And can I ask for clarification on the motion?
Yes.
Say it again. Words.
Okay. All right. We'll say both. The environmental, or I'll be specific, the LEED certification requirements, certification requirements, and affordable housing requirements of the District of Columbia be incorporated into the development.
Okay. And then
I have a question on the motion.
Okay.
On the motion to amend. The motion seems to say that, although it says taken into account, which is a little vague, but it seems to be intended to have WMATA follow whatever is the district standard in those two areas.
That's correct.
Which leaves me in doubt as to whether we would be seeking LEED certification or not in the first instance. So does anybody know exactly what it means in terms of what current district policy is?
Well, as it relates to government-directed construction, we build the LEED Silver standards in the city.
If you're building for yourself.
We're building for ourselves, and we strongly encourage and work with developers in the PUD process to build to LEED Silver as well.
Okay. I guess I would like to ensure that the project's at least LEED certified at a minimum. And, of course, if the district is able to encourage them to go higher, better for everyone. But I'm not sure if that's what we're saying or not. And I'm not exactly sure that we have a standard at this point on an agency basis.
Right.
But I think we're definitely to the point where things like this shouldn't be getting built without at least LEED certification. And that is a regional, I should say. That's also Council of Governments policy.
Let me just make sure that where our discussion was. We, as our WMATA policy that is for discussion on this agenda today, is to ensure that our projects are LEED.
Correct.
And that, looking at the other jurisdictional requirements, they have either that their own projects are, or that in some instances require developers. What we're saying out of this one is that we would like to see, and I think we want to say out of a general policy, that any developments include outside of WMATA being the entity, it also has to be certified if possible. Is that really what?
Well, I know we, but my
the
personal
that
view
we're here. No.
Is, and I'm not sure if this motion does this or not, but I mean, my view is that if we're going to put WMATA land into a project, then we ought to be sure that at a minimum it achieves certification. And if the jurisdiction goes higher, good. But I wouldn't want to find out that something wasn't being certified because, you know, it wasn't required in the jurisdiction, but we still did put, you know, regional land into it, in effect. And so,
could I make, so is it striking, just make it say it's, since it's a requirement, set a requirement for LEED.
My preference would be a minimum LEED certification up to whatever
Maybe the wording is to meet or exceed local standards and to, at a minimum, have LEED certification.
Okay. Are we clear on the motion?
Excellent.
On that aspect, I have a question on the second part of the motion.
Okay. Yes. The next question, Mr.
Zimmerman. So I take it that was unanimously consented to.
But yes.
I just wanted clarification on the housing. I know the district does now have kind of affordable housing inclusionary policy. So do I understand from your motion, Mr. Monument, that we would expect that whenever this is finally concluded and the district gives its ultimate approvals, that there will be a contribution to affordable housing as a result of this project?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Hearing none. All those in favor of the motion as amended?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The second item out of executive session is the amendment to Morgan Boulevard agreement, and that is to provide an extension of 90 days. Is there a motion?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Second? Thank you. A discussion? Hearing none? Motion is all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none. Thank you.
I wish to abstain and be so recorded.
Mr. Benjamin is so requested to be recorded as abstaining on that action. All righty. Thank you very much. The next item is the lease of the Prince George's Center, One Incorporated.
And Mr. Bottenheimer will make the presentation.
Next page, please. So our purpose today is to obtain the committee's concurrence and board's approval to negotiate and execute a lease agreement of Prince George's Center One, 40,000 square feet of space for the Metro Access Services Center and for our Customer Services Center. Right now, our next slide, right now our, we have 39,000 square feet of space for these offices in Silver Spring, Colesville Road, just across the street from the Silver Spring Metro Station. That lease is expiring next year, and we put out a solicitation, actually a request for expressions of interest last year for around the region for property owners who would have space available that we could use, meet our needs in terms of space, in terms of accessibility, access to transit. We had initially considered relocating the services to Carmen Turner, but because of the relocation costs and accessibility issues for our Metro Access customers, we ruled that out. And proceeded then to look at other proposals. We identified the building at 6505 Belcrest Road, right across the street from the Prince George's Plaza Metro Station, as the one that offered for the best met our financial and operating criteria. We have the seventh floor and a portion of the sixth floor and 40,000 square feet there. And we also have a right of first refusal for remaining 20,000 square feet of space on the sixth floor. To allow some expansion opportunity and to consolidate spaces we may need in future. The details of the lease are that it is a 10-year lease beginning in April of 2009. First 3 months of rent are free. We have a tenant improvement allowance of $1.5 million, 100 free parking spaces in an adjacent lot, free shuttle service to the Metrorail station if needed, and considerable value is that the former tenant's office space, which was, I believe, FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Administration, has left behind office furniture and equipment that has significant value to us, several hundred thousand dollars value that we could use at no cost. The office is also served directly by a number of local and Metro bus routes. The details here on page 20 of 52. The bottom line, comparing the Silver Spring lease renewal to what we've achieved, is we a 5.8, almost $6 million savings over the 10-year lease term compared to Silver Spring. I don't think you need to go into the details of this unless you would like that. And our recommendation is that the committee concur and forward this to the board for approval. Are there any questions?
Okay. Yes, the 5.8 million savings over 10 years. Where would that go?
Oh well, where would that go?
Yeah,
that's money from future budgets. So it's just that the future budgets will not be as large as they would have been otherwise. We won't be requesting as much as we would have.
Okay. Yes.
How many employees actually are working? I can't hear it.
It's coming up.
Access Services operates a team of oversight personnel there, as well as the paratransit contractor. So there are approximately, 40 or 50 individuals for the Metro team, and then another almost 140 people for the paratransit contractor. And then customer service also has, probably another 100 individuals in the same building.
How many of those use transit now to get to work?
There are quite a few people who use that, both employees as well as customers.
It just strikes me as odd that we have 100 free parking spaces, and we should be discouraging the use of parking and encouraging transit use by our own contract or employees. And while I'm certainly not going to
disagree with the analysis, and I think it's a good deal. I just a little troubled by that.
So. I will look into the use of the parking spaces, too. In fact, I should have looked into it before it came in front of you, just to see statistically how many people use transit, what the hours of operations and the availability of transit and the off hours are. But if I find that is transit available during the entire period of time, then we would have some discussions concerning the number of spaces. I can't answer that question today, but that is a good point that we need to look into.
Mr. Benjamin and Mr. Bonner.
We have a tenant improvement allowance of $1.6 million in this one. And you said that if we went to Carmen Turner, it was going to cost $11.8 million to move. Why that very, very large difference between going one place and going the other place?
Mr. Benjamin, the space is already built out essentially at the plaza, and that space just has to be modified for the use of the specific services that are coming in. The Carmen Turner, we would have to free up essentially warehouse type space and essentially build the entire facility from the ground up.
So it's construction of a whole facility that you're talking about.
Yeah, it's essentially construction of a building within a building.
I know that currently at Silver Spring we've got incredibly complex set of telephone lines, switching gear, computers, and all the stuff that goes with all of that. Will this $1.64 million cover moving all of that and installing it?
The issue I'm looking for.
For the switch, but this is a pretty complex facility that you've got set up right now with all sorts of equipment all over the place. What I really believe is going to happen is very shortly you're going to be coming back to us saying, oh, now we need money in order to move all of this stuff over. And I really doubt that the $1.64 million will in fact cover it all. And I'd really like to know whether it will or won't and what's actually going on here.
A question that I'd like to ask, what was the utilization of this space before? What kind of operation existed there?
It was a government agency. They used it on a 24/7 basis, so
And was that part of your analysis?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And I just wanted to clarify the information that I have, that we're, it's the difference of Carmen Turner is that we have a raw space that would have to be built out, not only physical structure, but the mechanical and electronic part. Here we're saying we have a space that was utilized as office with the same kind of mechanical and electrical.
I understand that, Madam Chairman. The issue in my mind is what we have in Silver Spring is an extremely complex telephone system because almost all of the stuff is going there. We're sending all, we have all sorts of computer systems in there with, all of that stuff wired and connected into all sorts of other places. And the question I have is, are you counting on moving all of that stuff and incorporating all of that stuff within the numbers that we have here?
Well, Mr. Benjamin, the answer to your question is yes, that is part of the calculation, that this building was previously used by FEMA. It was primarily a call center, so even the layout and the furniture configuration is very similar to what we would be putting there. The building has the fiber optic and wiring infrastructure. So we're talking about the phone switch, and we're also talking about the fact that since these are essential services to Metro that are going to be placed in this facility, it's actually not so much a relocation as it is a replication, that we're basically going to go add computer equipment, put in the AVL GPS type system that we have for Metro Access, lay in the phone equipment onto that existing structure, and then operate in parallel, and then a phase into the new operation in the new buildings. I mean, all of those things were done when the space was inspected. It was inspected for accessibility, and all those factors were included in the analysis of this location.
I guess what I'm asking for is an absolute assurance that this is the only cost. Everything else is somehow or other covered. You're not going to come back and ask for more. You're not going to
That's our
hit the operating budget. You're not going to hit the capital budget, because making this move with what you actually have to move looks to me to be well in excess of this amount. Now, it may be because you're replacing some of the equipment that you can install it out of another budget, but this one seems very unlikely. I guess I have another question, and that is, this is, as you said, across the street from the Prince George's Plaza station.
This is the view from the sixth floor of the building. It's a little bit milky, but I mean, this is the pedestrian. This is the pedestrian.
So why are we running a bus, or why is the contractor or the landlord
access,
running a bus?
For access customers who might need assistance getting from the station to the building.
And do we have any control over the quality of that service for those people?
Mr. Kent,
yes, we do. And part of the reason is distance, not so much the accessible pathway. Some customers would need assistance to be able to traverse that distance, even if there are not barriers. But another issue is that the property manager already runs this type of shuttle service, so you know they extended that courtesy to us as a new tenant, as you know, in kind of in conjunction with what they already envision for the building.
And at the current site, we don't need to do that because we're so close.
We're very, very close to the rail station.
Uh-huh. Okay. It's one of those things where I'm concerned about us coming back 6 months from now or whenever we move in and saying, oops, we discovered that this service really wasn't good enough, and so what we're going to have to do is. So
well, we discussed
there are a number of
too.
Elements of this that look like they haven't. They're not equivalent to what we're getting today, and what we're getting is another 1,000 square feet. And so I sort of look at that and say, okay.
Mr. Lama, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair.
Okay. I did want to also endorse Mr. Giancola's comments about parking. It seems odd that we as a transit agency are counting the fact that we get free parking.
Madam Chair, let me again be the third to say the same thing about the parking issue. It'd be useful to know. While it says free, we know that there's nothing's free. So what the value of that is, if we can use it to cover some of the costs of the reconstruction, might make sense for us to rethink that. Going back, I do want to ring the same note that Director Benjamin's asking about the full cost. I think while what you're sharing with us is comforting, that we did do the analysis to make sure it was a replacement, as you're saying, versus a new build, it'd be useful to actually know what the budget is and give us some more comfort that what's being covered and the 1.6 is going to be covered in the 1.6. So I think there's a lot of caution. I mean, we all recognize in Carmen Turn is a very underutilized piece of property the authority owns. And so I think we're always looking for opportunities to get better use out of it. So we want to make sure that we are making a good, smart, well thought out, well informed decision. So I think it'd be useful to see the detail of the cost of the 1.6.
Let me know. I'm not even suggesting that we go to Carmen Turn. I'm just saying, you know, Is this one where we're going to be taken by surprise a little bit later that we have additional costs that we didn't know about? And from the numbers that are here, it looks like it.
Madam Chairman, if I could just comment in talking to staff, the estimate for the move is about $125,000 is the estimate that we have from a mover. The phone switch is about $400,000, as you've heard. The staff anticipates that the other $1 million is sufficient to make the full relocation and start the process up.
Can I ask first to Mr. Solomon and then back to Mr. Jones?
I want to commend staff and your hard work, and I think it's a good deal. You know, we always talk at this table about saving money and trying to be more efficient, and I think you've achieved those goals with this. Of course, any county would not like to lose a tenant, but when the tenant moves for good reasons and save $5.8 million of return on the lease, then I think that's a good deal. So I commend you. Now, on the parking issue, before you reduce any parking, I would just ask that you talk to Public Works and Transportation in the county, because as you know, and I said, the county supplements Metro Access, and it has a lot of vehicles that they use. And it may be an opportunity to get some of those vehicles at the site for parking purposes and utilization to supplement Metro Access service. So talk to Public Works and Transportation about their needs and before you, you do a reduction in parking space. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Giancola.
Yeah, just an observation. In a past life, and sitting on some FEMA focus groups, and I know exactly which building you're going to, it was in pretty sorry shape many years ago. And I hope that the landlord or the owner of the building has upgraded it somewhat over the years. But I recall a couple focus groups that I sat with FEMA where, man, I didn't want to come back to that building again.
The building was remade in 1998.
When?
1998.
1998.
Okay.
Mr. Zimmer.
Yeah, I don't even know where to start. This picture is makes quite an impression there. That's quite a view we're getting from the place you want to rent there. How many acres of parking is out there?
Well, that parking belongs to the Prince George's Plaza of the shopping center there on the other side of the street from Metro.
And that's what's between the building we're renting and the station.
That's correct.
Anybody talking to these people about development? You know, maybe making use of land right next to a metro station for something other than car storage? Just a thought. I really wanted to go back to the very first thing I think that maybe Mr. Benjamin had said. I guess I have a hard time understanding. How many square feet do we have in Benzie Drive at the Farmer Turner facility? What's the GFA of that place?
I believe it's 600,000 plus 650,000.
I remember it was some phenomenal amount, and I suppose that in retrospect, given what the board paid at the time it paid, something about I was very skeptical about at the time, it probably looks like a pretty good real estate deal, you know, how much we got for the price we got of that. But I'm still just having a hard time understanding how it can possibly make sense to rent 40,000 square feet of office space in somewhere in Prince George's County when I already own 600,000 square feet of office space in Prince George's County in one building. I'm just not getting that.
Well, there's several different issues. One, the common Turner facility is being, we are putting new use within the facility itself. And the original plan called for a major bus rehab facility, which we are doing the outline of that facility as we speak. And that's going to require large numbers and large portions of the facility. The second issue and the main issue in this one was the accessibility. Being able to get people to the location itself. It is not on the bus line. It's not within walking distance or from the rail station itself. It would require vehicles shuttling people back and forth that we would have to pay for.
Which I think is what led to the discussion here. Up there is the accessibility of this place. I've got highway and parking lot between me and the station.
Common Turner, you're right. It's major issue was, number one, we do have plans to utilize the space there for bus rehab facilities. The second is,
how many people do we employ at Carmen Turner?
Over 1,000.
Roughly. Order of magnitude. And when you're done, you're going to have more people there, I assume, with the work you're doing to fill it out, right?
Yes.
You think we could wind up with over 1,000 people working there?
Yes.
Aren't you going to have to run some kind of regular service there anyway?
We have a regular bus. We have a shuttle service, but it's a small bus that we operate back and forth. On certain time, I think it's every 15-minute headways. If we operate our access services there, we'll require additional headways probably in the neighborhood.
It's twice.
Twice as much, we would have to operate twice the amount of services we're operating today. There's two factors. There's a capital cost, there's accessibility, and we also have plans to utilize the space there.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Is there a motion here?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
And the motion is to accept the staff recommendation to negotiate the 40,000 square feet for the customer service. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed?
Abstain.
Mr. Zimmerman recorded as abstain. Okay, thank you. The next item on the agenda is the policy on LEED certification. And this is to develop a policy that reflects Metro's policy of LEED certification on its facilities. And Mr.
I'll do this one. Thank you. Thank you. We're here to request board approval, a committee and board approval of a resolution that would establish a policy for all new and substantially rehabilitated Metro facilities should be designed and built with the goal of receiving at least LEED certification and encouraging initiatives that will reduce the carbon footprint, especially of Metro facilities. There are minor costs involved in going to LEED certification, and that the cost of construction and design may increase by 4 to 10%, and there are fees for actually getting the paperwork through the process of LEED certification, and that averages about $2,600 is our best understanding. But the benefits of LEED certification, it costs less to operate and maintain the facility once it's completed. It reduces the carbon footprint, improves energy and water efficiencies, healthier and safer facilities for the occupants of the buildings, and it's a physical demonstration of the values of the organization that owns and operates them. LEED certification, I think most of you are aware what that is, developed by the U.S. Green Building Council. There are different rankings within LEED certifications, certified, silver, gold, and platinum, based on points that you receive by going through the process of certification. Why do we suggest LEED certification? For one reason, it's one of the goals of the board and the general manager to adopt such a policy and to continue Metro's lead in providing improvements to the environment within the region. Part of the background on page 31 is what the other jurisdictions are doing in regards to certification, and not to read these, but I think, as you see, almost all jurisdictions do represent are at one stage or another of certification processes, and Metro certainly wants to participate in that too. We have to remember that Metro's have been a leader for years on reducing environmental carbon footprint and other emissions into the air, but when we wrote this, we were carrying 750,000 people a day on the rail system. I think I better at least get that up to 800,000, with 830 electrically powered vehicles. Each customer forgoes a solo 20-mile round trip can reduce carbon dioxide emissions by 20 pounds per day. Next page. Again, the board has taken many actions in the past. In 2001, October, we went to ultra-low sulfur diesel in the fleet. That was the quickest and most expansive way of making improvements to the bus fleet. We have over 400 compressed natural gas buses currently in service, and as you've seen in front of the building today is the latest version of a compressed natural gas bus that will soon go into service. Another 22 are being put in service, I believe, in the next month. We have 50 diesel hybrid buses in service and more on order. So Metro is taking many steps to improve the environment. We can further enhance our environmental stewardship policies to include green building standards with the goal of obtaining LEED certification. And again, there are there's many benefits for doing this. And our recommendation is that the board adopt a policy that we incorporate LEED certification at a minimum into our standards for buildings and encouraging initiatives that will reduce the carbon footprint, especially at our own facilities.
Sure.
Happy to answer any questions.
I just have one question before I go to you, Mr. Zimmerman. When staff, in its making its recommendation, did it do an analysis as to choosing LEED certification versus LEED silver, the others, and did you come up with a delta that said by each?
Well, I think the goal as Mr. Zimmerman mentioned earlier, is to at least obtain LEED certification, not as a maximum, but as a minimum, and certainly strive if the benefits are there is to strive for a higher level, and certainly a silver or a gold would be wonderful if the conditions are such and that the cost isn't too prohibitive, but at the minimum we would suggest that we at least get the certification on the facilities.
Thank you. Okay, I guess I was looking to see if there was any fixed cost that you looked at to sort of decide where.
Well, I don't know that we looked at specifics. I think there are different projects that lean more towards higher levels of certification, and not to try to strap projects at a high expense. I think our goal would be to try to obtain the highest possible level, okay, and probably would discuss the options with the board as we brought things forward as to what we anticipate the cost of different levels of certification would be in part of a project.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. That's exactly where I wanted to start. I think, you know, it's good that we're, you know, establishing such a policy. It's important that Metro be as much as possible, I think, at the cutting edge on the efforts to generally improve our environment and specifically to deal with the most critical problems, which on a regional level, of course, involve the air, and on a global level involve the climate. And that's really what LEED speaks to and why it's become an important movement in this country that has taken off in a relatively short period of time to become widely accepted, so that when private projects come forward now, certainly in my jurisdiction, I'm sure other people are seeing this as well, the applicants regularly tout the environmental features and make reference explicitly to LEED. They're also at this point pretty much expected that they're going to come in with LEED certification. That's no longer, I mean, I think one of the things they've discovered is it's not that hard. A lot of things you do to do a LEED building are going to pay off in the building in the long run. They save you on energy, and as the price of oil goes up, they're more and more willing to go for more points on the LEED score I've seen. Moreover, I note that the Council of Governments has adopted something that calls for LEED silver certification for all public buildings in the region. I frankly think that the board would be embarrassed to put forward a facility at this point that didn't achieve at least a LEED silver rating. And I would propose, Madam Chair, that that what's before us be strengthened by seeking not simply LEED certification, but the silver level as a minimum for all buildings that Metro would construct. I would note that the earlier discussion was about a private development on Metro land, in which I'm still thinking LEED certification may be a little bit low, but this is for the things that we would actually build, you know, own and operate for generations likely. And I think as we're going to find is within a few years, the standard's going to move up anyway, and we're going to look behind the times pretty quickly if we don't at least reach for silver. So that would be my proposal.
Question?
Okay. I think I saw Mr. Yule, Mayor Yule, and then Ms. McKay.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just wanted to echo Mr. Zimmerman's comments, and but and again, I serve in a COG board, and we did indeed approve that silver is a minimum. But I think I'm also in the construction business, not that I participate in a lot of work at all. But I think it also provides clarity for the bidding. Throughout the bidding process to know exactly, you know, what the owner's looking for. I participated in a construction project recently for the Army Corps of Engineers, and the bids were all over the map because they were leaving it up to the contractor to decide, you know, what level, certification level you wanted to produce, and it's like, that's not equitable, that's not fair. I mean, you know, we have limited dollars to deal with. You tell us, the bidder, what you want to achieve, and that's what how we'll price the project. So I would support adding at a minimum. So,
yeah, I just want to echo that as well. I think this is a good way to go. I think it clarifies things at the beginning for all parties. But I just want a clarification from Mr. Zimmerman, because the item talks about substantial rehabilitation and construction of new facilities, and would you be requiring a silver certification in both instances, or was your intention to have a silver rating for new facilities and a LEED certification of some level for rehabilitation?
Well, I guess that depends on whether there's a precise, maybe we should ask staff whether there's a precise meaning to substantial rehabilitation. I took substantial rehabilitation to be you're pretty thoroughly redoing something like gutting a building.
It depends upon the magnitude of the project. If we're doing things that are a re-roofing project or a remodeling project on a bus facility or yard, it's extremely difficult to get to that level.
It's got to be, in essence, a substantial rebuild of the facility to enhance the overall facility or expand it. The more opportunities given in the leads process earlier in the design also, because you're able to take advantage of things then. A lot of times when you're doing a rehabilitation project, you can't make those kinds of choices because of the way the facility was originally constructed. So if we were to look at this more as a goal for achieving a LEED certification on substantial rehabilitation projects and a goal for a LEED silver for a new project, that I think would be something that would be more achievable.
So, but I just don't understand though. So that's why you have the word substantial in there.
Correct.
So I think the wording actually takes care of it. I also assume that on individual projects, staff's going to bring the project to the board's going to approve the project one way or another. If there's a real issue on something like that, they're going to tell us.
Right.
I mean, this is basically, you know, general policy direction to understand. So, you know, if you have a situation where there's a question about how substantial it is and there's a real serious problem about meeting it, then we're going to know that. We're going to make an appropriate decision. We're not throwing out common sense here. Mm-hmm. But I think it would make it clear that when we're doing really major work, a new facility or substantially rebuilt facility, as Mr. Couch was saying, then we want to shoot for silver. That would be my intention.
Mr. Benson?
I fully support everything that's been said and reiterate the positions that people have taken and particularly support what Mr. Zimmerman has just proposed. I did want to note, however, that as was presented in the presentation and as you've discussed and as we all are aware, there are capital costs associated with doing this, mm-hmm. and there are operating savings that accrue. I get concerned when we are about to pass a policy like this and the board action information summary says no impact on funding. I understand just doing the policy doesn't change anything, but it does have a long-term impact on funding. And under that logic, almost nothing we do has an immediate impact on funding unless we're buying something at that moment. So if we could look at those things and say, yes, there is an impact, and give some indication of that, there was at least a little bit of it in the presentation, I would greatly appreciate it.
I do. And I agree. I understand what you're saying. I think we did the presentation. It will increase our capital cost 4 to 10%. Is the estimate.
Right. And I appreciate the fact that, and that was discussed also.
Right.
When you made the presentation, but you also have a piece of paper here that
says no financial.
No impact.
Okay. We have a motion on the table.
Actually, I'm not sure we do.
Well, we don't.
In which case, I'll move approval recommendation to the board for approval. With the inclusion of the words at the silver level in the appropriate resolve clause.
Second.
And I'd like to know if we also might want to add to that amenda to reference the fact that and encourage in working with developers to meet the LEED certification, minimally meet LEED certification. Because I think it gives us to look beyond our own in the jurisdictions.
Or we might make it that we encourage them to meet the standard we're setting for our buildings.
Right. That could be the wording. Is that acceptable?
Certainly.
Okay. All righty. That's the motion as amended. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much. That's the on that. And then we're going to go through the... last item is the system infrastructure rehabilitation program for the Red Line project, DuPont Station to Silver Spring.
Mr. Couch will make a presentation.
Okay.
Good morning. I'm here this morning to explain to you a new and very exciting process that we were proposing to take to change the methodology that we do all of our system-wide rehabilitation and replacement programs. It's a new concept that's in place that changes us from the way that we have been doing business over the last 5 to 10 years in the program and takes us to a point that we, as we move forward to achieve a state of good repair, while still always considering our customers first and making as few disruptions as possible to our customers. By way of background, the current practice that we have on rehabilitation projects is to do them on a disciplined basis. We have had contracts that you have previously reviewed and approved for replacement of fire lines, for replacement of track, for replacement of air conditioning systems, for train control, all the various systems that form the overall integrated operating Metro Rail system. We've done on a disciplined basis. That results at this point with a series of rehabilitation contracts that are currently about 60 strong. And under those different series of contracts that are all in the $5 to $15 million range, everybody is competing for that same scarce time, the 2.5 to 3 hour window that's available during non-revenue. What this does is to revise and propose to revise that practice so that we focus on an individual area of the system at one time, so that we do one major contract on each one of the lines, and so that we're able to achieve a greater economy of scale, provide less inconvenience to our customers, and to be able to go ahead and do the work in a much more efficient manner. That would be by doing single tracking in one section of the railroad on an individual line to accomplish all that contract work. And the proposal would be to start with the red line. That shows on the next slide. The first contract would be a contract that would go from DuPont Station around to Silver Spring. By putting everything under one umbrella contract and doing all that rehabilitation between interlockings and starting after rush hour in the evening, the first phase of this first four-phase contract would be from the Judiciary Square station up to Rhode Island Avenue. In that area, when you look at the wider headways that exist after the completion of evening rush, we can single track through that area without any change to headways. We can stay within the existing restrictions that we have. So it would be something that would not in any way affect our customers and would give us a way to accomplish that work. When you get into other portions of it back from Judiciary Square in the core of system back to DuPont, we won't be able to achieve that, but we'll have other ways to work through it and always be sure that we serve our customers by not doing work that would affect things on an evening that was a special event at Verizon Center. So that's the way that the first portion of the first contract for the red line would be. And it would be divided over three contracts. The first is what we would propose today. And then in follow-on years, we would do the remainder of the red line. The second contract would go from DuPont to Grosvenor. And then the third contract would pick up the end of the line from Grosvenor to Shady Grove and also include the opposite end from Silver Spring out to the terminal at Glenmont. It would be a similar concept on the next slide for the blue-orange line, where we would go ahead and start with the first contract that would be National Airport to New Carrollton, again in phases, and triggered to the areas between interlockings so that we would be able to single track after evening rush so that we're able to, in most cases, hold the headways and still provide the proper and timely service to our customers. It gives us the advantage that by opening up that window and getting to a point that we've got a 6 to 8 hour window, we're getting a tremendous increase in efficiency above that 2.5 to 3 hours that we currently get. The other two contracts that would be the follow-on on the blue-orange line are Roslyn to Vienna, and then finally the piece that goes to the south, serving beyond National Airport to Huntington and Springfield. The same approach would be used on the green line. We'd start, again, with the oldest portion of the system in the core, do the portion from U Street to Anacostia that was opened in the early 90s, and then progress out to the portion that was Fort Totten to Greenbelt that was the latter follow-on portion. And lastly, we'd do the piece that is the area that goes down to Branch Avenue. We'd very much limit the work that's done on weekends. We're trying to keep everything to the Sunday night through Friday morning window with the early outs, again, to provide the most customer service that we can and not affect any events on a weekend. It would only be in the case that we had, for example, that we went through at Metro Center earlier this year, where we had no other choice but to do the work with a single tracking operation on both the red line and the blue-orange line. It was a three-day weekend that we did that. That would be the only time that we would move away from the standard nighttime windows. The next slide would put the same approach in place on our backroom facilities, if you will. We would have a contract that would do the rail yards and a different contract that would do the bus facilities. That would be to keep all of our maintenance facilities in a state of good repair. It's something that would be tied and scheduled around the times that the buses and the rail cars are needed to be put into service so that we don't interfere with the process of maintenance in those facilities. And we're then able to go ahead and continue to provide the reliable fleet out onto the railroad or out onto the streets. So, but it's something that would not affect and would not be noticed by our customers because, again, it's the backroom maintenance facilities that we do. We trigger that, again, by the oldest facilities. On the rail side, the Brentwood Yard is something that was put in operation in 1976 with the start of the system, and then we'd work sequentially through the remainder of the system. So it's a long-term, repetitious process. It gives us a much more organized and efficient process. By doing this in limited areas with single tracking, we believe that it is more customer friendly. We hope that there will be less interruptions and less single tracking that affects the overall schedule. However, there are places on the system where the interlockings are further apart that you can't hold those 15 minute or so, or longer than that, the further you get into the extensions for headways. But every attempt on this schedule on the next slide shows the sequential contracts, starting with this one from DuPont to Silver Spring, and then cascading through each one of the other lines. That brings me to the recommendation portion, which is to request concurrence for this first contract for the red line from DuPont to Silver Spring.
Thank you. Mr. Benjamin and Ms. Jankola.
Can you go back one slide, please? I, first of all, thank you very, very much for emphasizing what was not in the original presentation, but coming up with a lot of comments on the impact on the customer and customer service. I would note that we have had a lot of people who were very upset about the work that was being done along the western portion of the Red Line, where during the off-peak periods, in the evenings and weekends, service got down to the point where beyond various points you were getting 30-minute headways. I hear what you're saying, that in some cases you can't avoid that. In other cases you may be able to avoid it. I'm just looking at that schedule and saying, you know, the first portion of that runs 5 years. It says that the people on the western end of the red line would be affected by whatever this work is for about 5 years on evenings and weekends. Before we really approve this, I would love to have a better understanding of how much of the service could be adjusted so that we would know what the impact on those people will be, because I think 30-minute headways on evenings and weekends for 5 years for those people, and if you happen to live out at Shady Grove 7 years or beyond Grosvenor, is unacceptable. We are not going to be able to do that. So before we do a final approval of this, I'd like to know a lot more about what the staging is going to be like, how that's going to affect our customers, and how customer-friendly we are going to be in this process. It's a really, really important part of what this is all about. Those customers already have told us what they think about those kinds of problems. If you have now solved that problem that you had before, and you can get down to 15-minute headways no matter what, that's a whole different ballgame. But I didn't hear Mr. Couch saying that. My second issue is that you're asking us to approve almost $100 million worth of contracts. I really like the approach that you're using. And I really like the fact that you are saying you're going to try and integrate this to minimize the degree to which any particular portion of the system is impacted as the contractor goes in. I don't have any idea, actually, what you're going to do here. Yeah, you're going to rehabilitate, but what you're rehabilitating and how you're rehabilitating it and how this is going to be spent, I don't know very much about, and it seems a little odd as a board member to be saying, yeah, go ahead with $100 million worth of contract and probably almost $150 million when you get done with all the options. without understanding a little bit more about what they are and how they work. That having been said, I don't have any problem with you initiating the process. I think the board ought to get involved before you award, and between now and then, the answers to the issues that I've raised ought to be given to this committee.
Madam Chair, we could do that. We could go ahead and initiate the contract and bring back all of the information Mr. Benjamin has requested, as well as additional information of the impacts to our customers. I ultimately believe that this will be a better operations for our customers and a better experience, but we need to bring back more detailed information about the specifics of the work as well as the impact to the customer.
Could you begin, though, by today, since we've introduced this issue, a clarity as to the larger scope of impact? That is, we heard a 30-minute headway, and that may be perceived, if not fact, that for the next 5 years there will be, or 7 years, 30-minute headways on the red line. And I think we need to have a better clarity on what we're talking about.
Good morning. My name is Dave Kubicek, Assistant General Manager over Rail Operations. I've worked with Mr. Couch on this program and presentation and overall philosophy, what's taking place, and I truly can't support that the 30-minute headway is almost for us as a major taboo. So whenever we're looking at it from interlocking to interlocking, we're looking at sometimes where our headways in the evening time gets into like a 15 to 20-minute platform. That's what our headway is, say, for instance, when we look at when we start initiating at 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock service at night. We're not talking about a platform where we're trying to come in and work it, start working at 6 o'clock and then all of a sudden we're disrupting because we're still really basically in peak. So as we mirror this, as we work in the outer realms, our headway could be the 15 to 20 minute area where we know that we wouldn't have any problem with a single tracking activity and it would be very transparent to the customer. Whenever we get into the core, the complexity naturally is very complex because of the number of activities of Verizon Center, or the Nationals baseball game, you know, throughout. And as we're looking at this, we're scheduling these work around that as well. And so from a 30-minute activity, that is something right now that we haven't seen. We really feel pretty comfortable that it's in the 15 to 20 minutes. Maybe sometimes it gets up to 25, depending upon the nature of the work. But it does happen in numerous stages and phases.
Can I just follow up on that, please? So one of the things that I've had several discussions with many of you about during the work that was done on the Red Line is you went into 15-minute headways, and then one train would turn around, and you would have to wait for a second train to do the remainder of your trip. So effectively, for any length of trip, it would be a 30-minute headway. You're saying you don't have that as an operating philosophy anymore, and you're going to say it's 15 minutes to wherever you need to go, and if you're doing turnarounds, you're on 7.5-minute headways.
We're intentionally planning that, at taking that out of the schedule. For example, one of the reasons that we really think that this is a great philosophy is because daytime peak, off-peak day, and PM peak are our three primary areas that we really want to keep the railroad and such going. And so this off-peak day, as y'all have known, if you've seen the pages, you haven't seen that activity starting to take place because we've already started from a maintenance standpoint shifting that work to the nighttime. It also provides a safer platform for our employees and our customers because, realistically, whenever we only have an hour or 2 hours to really do work, you spend 2 or 3 hours mobilizing to do the event, then you have to get in there, do your work, then you demobilize. We're really creating more service issues. And so whenever with this platform of concentrating on the three areas, PM services and the off-peak day, that whenever we do shift tonight, then we can layer our work along with the engineering where we're doing these global platforms as well. It's much better in management of resources and our response times as well, because sometimes we were put in a position where you only have so much staff to respond from one side of the system to the next. This gives us a concentration to really focus our schedules.
I hear that, Mr. Kubicek, but I don't hear the answer to my question, which
is that a yes or no?
Are you, in fact, going to be able to operate so that people beyond a certain point are not seeing 30-minute headways and trains turning back, you know, 15, what you had before was 15-minute headways up to some point in the system, mm-hmm. and beyond that, it was effectively 30 because every other train was going through and every other train was turning around. And when I made a lot of noise about that, I was told, oh, no, this is the only way we can do it. Now you're saying you can do it another way. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
And you're going to be primarily at about 15-minute headways and maybe sometimes 20, and then I heard a little bit of perhaps 25.
Yes, sir.
I mean, that's starting to get up to that 30 again.
Yes, sir. I mean, right now we are looking at the schedule to be able to sustain a 15 to 20-minute off-peak headway. Again, that's where managing from interlocking to interlocking is so critical, because whenever we look at the map beforehand, they always manage from station to station. But realistically, for us, whenever we're operating the railroad, it's where we can turn or where we can shift from location to location. So we're really having to look at each respective segment between the interlocking, then planning the maintenance. That's the key.
Let me reiterate my request then.
Yes.
Could you come back to us with how you plan to
yes.
do that, what
Absolutely.
That's going to be, what it will look like, and please don't wait until the day when you want the approval for award. And come to us in the interim to this committee and give those kinds of answers so that we do have some idea as to what it is you're planning to do, so we don't get all jammed up on one day, and if we don't award today, the world will collapse.
Absolutely.
Mr. Jankola.
Yeah, I would support the concept that you're approaching on the construction method, and I wanted to just add to Mr. Benjamin's comments that, you know, you may want to do a notional car for each station on, you know, during rush hour, non-rush hour, and just tell us, you know exactly how each, you know, station will be impacted
yes.
time-wise. In other words, do it for each line, each time period. And so, you know, a notional car, so to speak, and what you ideally would see the headways to be. I understand fully what he's saying, and certainly, and looking at the schedule, you use the word exciting. I would say challenging. This is a big challenge. Not only the red line is going to be impacted, but you're going to have three different lines impacted at the same time.
Absolutely.
So you're going to be dealing with a massive scheduling issue, which certainly needs to be communicated properly to our customers. And certainly I would urge almost even a separate little part of our website to talk about the daily schedule for each line and status, and even charts like this, and maybe even the notional car and how long it takes to go from one station to the next during rush hour and non-rush hour. We really need to communicate exactly how it's going to impact on our customers, and maybe the website would be a good place to do that. But I certainly agree with the fact that this is going to be quite a challenge from a scheduling point of view. We're talking 7-year impact on all the lines, really, 7 to 8 year impact.
Mr. Jankola, this really is a forever challenge, because this repeats on a 12-year cycle. You wind up doing the first section.
I'm sure I wanted to hear that.
Okay. Just stop where I was ahead.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's been 30 years, right?
Right.
So obviously we don't want to wait 30 years next time. But
And that's exactly the point. That gets you to the point that you're replacing things in a normal cycle. You do the first contract from Silver Spring to DuPont, and then basically 12 years hence you're back to do the things that need to be replaced at that point.
There are, with regard to where the money is going to be spent, is important. For instance, I know where I get on at the Tacoma Metro Station, the area that's uncovered now, a lot of the tiles, floor tiles, are disintegrated. And in fact, it's actually a very dangerous situation. I'm sure it occurs in other locations as well. And of course, I recall one of the first actions I had over a year ago when I was appointed to the board, we approved a new tile. Remember the new tile that we approved? Have we ever put any of those in yet?
Not yet.
So, you know, I would certainly welcome them at Tacoma if you wanted to start with us. But that being said, you know, give us more specifics on what's in that dollar value.
Mr. Monomai and Mr. McKay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Quick question. I think one, staff should be applauded for approaching this in a very innovative way. This is a drastic change from the way we used to do it before. I do have a question about, you know, you can certainly learn a lot from others' experiences. Is this something that we do on our own, or is this something that some other authority or property has done before that we have some experience in what the impacts would be?
Nobody else in the States has done this. The closest that is to this is the London model, with the London Underground, where they came up with two different contractors to go into two of their routes. But they had those sections from end to end. It was a multi-year, multi-billion dollar. So this is the first time that a concept like this has been tried here. It's a variation of that London model.
Okay, that's helpful. That's helpful. No, I think that's important for us to know that it's been done before. The London Underground is a well-run operation. I think we'll attest to that. A second question I have is, related to the scope, there's some questions about what the scope of the project's going to be. One of the things I think it would make sense to also do is that we know that you continually hear about minor customer service requests on a day-to-day basis. It'd probably be useful if you're going to come in and do this type of comprehensive maintenance work on the system itself. It makes sense to take care of all the outstanding customer service complaints about signage, little nicks and tic-tacs, and just going to wrap it up into one project. So when you're done, people have a completed product to be pleased about if they're going to be inconvenienced. And then, I guess my last question was, what's going to be the impact in terms of maintenance activity on the segments that are not currently being actively worked on? So DuPont to Silver Spring is first, so does that mean that Silver Spring to Glenmont's going to be we're going to look the other way while we're doing work there? Or what's going to be the balance to make sure that we're still servicing the entire system and not just the segment we're focused on?
The normal maintenance and preventive maintenance that goes on day-to-day by our in-house forces will continue as required in those areas. This is the major rebuild program that we've had piecemeal up until now. But we will have the capability within these contracts that if something major does occur beyond the area that this contract includes, we'll have line items. It's a hybrid three-part contract. Part of it is design build to get it started. Part of it is conventional design bid build. And the third is an order for service contract. So there will be a whole series of line items that will be there, so that if something does occur someplace else on the line that can't be taken care of by the in-house forces, we would be able to take this contract or go to an isolated area and do that type of repair. There'd be everything from paving to sidewalk to leaks to cable in that OFS-type contract. So we'll have that capability within the scope of the contract to go to areas beyond the current work limit on an emergency basis.
Yes, I'm looking at Appendix A, which is page 51, and I'm noticing we've been talking about customer service, and of course, my biggest customer service aggravation revolves around the elevators and escalators, and we've talked in detail about what happens on the rails, but I notice in Appendix A that elevators and escalators are zeroed out in Phase 3 and Phase 4, and a significant amount of money dedicated in Phase 2. How does the schedule work for that, because it's not elaborated on the overall program schedule, how escalators and elevators work? And then secondly, while that work is being done, what considerations are given on a station-by-station basis? I mean, we're certainly not taking out all of the elevators and or escalators at one station at one time. So how does the whole elevator and escalator rehabilitation program work?
The each one of these areas, Phase One has a specific limit. It would involve the stations that are Judiciary Square, Union Station, New York Avenue, which is relatively new, and Rhode Island. Each one of those areas and each one of those stations have had major elevator and escalator rehabilitations in the last 5 or 6 years. What this does is it picks up the remaining units. A lot of the units that are remaining on the escalators are the platform to mezzanine units. The entranceway units, for the most part, have been rehabilitated. As we go into each one of these phases, the first phase would be a 15-month phase. Phases 2, 3, and 4 would be 12 months. And it's the concept is all of the work within those areas. Phase 2 takes you for Metro Center, Gallery Place, Farragut, North, and DuPont. So there are a tremendous number in those transfer stations of the mezzanine to platform escalators that have not been totally rebuilt. That's why the scope is so high. When you go to the area that is Phase 3, it starts to take you out to Brooklyn and Fort Totten. Those have been done under the just completed escalator rehab contracts, and so we've gotten ahead of the curve on those in those areas because the first ones that we did do were those exterior units. So this is all completely tied to the work within the phase, and I apologize, I should have listed the areas that each one of these phases includes. That would have made it much clearer, and I will do that when we return with the scope of what's in each one of those phases.
Thank you.
Okay. And I guess, I mean, it goes without saying the comments that were mentioned earlier. However, we can communicate. We've talked about this at length in meetings before about signage and other things, particularly important with the elevators and escalators. So I hope that that, you know, is a part of this overall plan, too. Thank you.
Mr. Yule.
Yes, I just wanted to piggyback on the previous discussion. And looking at the schedule, and again, I appreciate staff saying that when they come back, they'll provide us with detail, because it's important to know under all of these, you know, through the four different phases, but then more importantly, the prioritization in terms of, for instance, starting at DuPont to Silver Spring, $8 million being requested. What exactly is the scope of work for $8 million? And it gets to what Mr. McKay was getting concerned with. Are elevators, escalators going to be part of that? And, that, but have, I mean, it's, I get the sense that for the whole $145 million for this chart here, that there's this everything has been scoped out phase by phase, project by project. Is that correct?
Yes.
Can we have that information? I think it's valuable. I mean, because as a, for instance, you know, I'm sure while this first contract is for $8 million, that's not going to be the average or the standard. Some contracts could be $25 million, some may be larger, some may be just $1 million. But on the board meeting, we're going to be proving out new DBE goals. And part of my concern, or should be our concern overall, is that these phases, the way these projects, the way they're being broken down, that they don't hinder or impact the ability of DBEs to participate, because they're going to be at such a large magnitude under this new process, which I certainly endorse, to the extent that we may be creating an unnecessary evil. And but I, you know, I think it would benefit us to see the total breakdown of the scope.
There is a 20% DBE goal within this, what would be one contract for $145 million if all the options are exercised. And there is a 20% performance requirement by the prime contractor to ensure that we get a contractor that is actually performing work and not just a broker in place. So we're taking steps, Mr. Yule, to go ahead and make sure that we preserve that ability to have the DBE participation. We expect that some of the contractors who have been doing work for us as primes on the smaller projects, like replacing fire lines or other smaller work, will actually be subcontractors to a major prime contractor as we get through this process.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Is there a motion on the table?
I'm happy to move. I move this item as an initiate only, not an award, and with the condition that you return to the committee with more details as to the scope of the individual items and more details as to how you will deal with customers and headways throughout this process. And also, in this, would you please work with the JCC as well as this committee to make sure that we get staff input on the entire item?
Second.
I think we have the motion. And I heard the DBE piece there is to be included in that.
Yes.
Yes.
All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Thank you very much. This is a very, I think, forward-moving process, and I took a lot of time on it, but it was very important.
Before we adjourn, since I'm noticing that the customer service operations and safety committee doesn't meet again until September 11th. On Monday, the Fairfax County Board of Supervisors approved up to $75,000 for surveillance cameras at the Vienna and Franconia and Springfield Metro stations. And I wanted to make sure staff was aware of that, and that, you know, while we're in recess, that Chief Tabor made contact with the Fairfax County Police to work out how we could move forward with the installation of those.
Sir, we do that.
Right. Thank you.
Is that a right? I think it was. Okay. Thank you. We stand adjourned.